The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, November 7th, 2018. I'm Kyle Kellum. Ahead this hour, it's the day after the midterms, and what do we know about the future of the region, the state, and the country? Scheduled to be with us this hour, Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics to discuss the state's results as the Arkansas GOP sweeps the constitutional office races, keeps control of both chambers at the state legislative level, and returns four incumbents to the U.S. House. We'll also talk about Arkansas voters approving all three issues that were still legitimate ballot measures. Later, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda is scheduled to talk with Denise Garner. Last night, the Democrat defeated Republican incumbent Charlie Collins in the Arkansas House 84 district race. Democrats didn't win legislative races in Benton County. What does that mean for a party that's trying to grow in a part of the state that's been one of the most consistently Republican for decades? Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek will have that for us. And there may be more election-related items as well as we move forward. Timothy Dennis keeping track of the minimum wage amendment and its approval. And we think we'll still have time to slip into the Harold and Blanche Cox News Studio to get a rundown on live music in the area from Timothy as well. After this afternoon's Ozarks at Large, it's NPR's Here and Now from Ohio to Georgia, Florida to California, Indiana to Missouri, and beyond. Analysis of the midterm elections with reporters from around the country, as well as analysis from NPR's political strategists, historians, and experts, the view from overseas, and much more. Here and Now begins at 1. And this afternoon, a Fayetteville apartment complex will formally be recognized as a LEED certified outfit. Specialized Real Estate Group says the Uptown Apartments on North Steele will receive green building recognition this afternoon in a small ceremony. Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics is with me now from Little Rock. Roby, did you think we'd ever see the other side of the 2018 midterms?
Of course, Kyle. I always look forward to Christmas Day and forms of elections, and we opened all the presents last night, and we got a lot of what we thought we might get, and then we got a few surprises. So isn't that kind of how Christmas sometimes works?
That is, and then there are a couple of mayoral packages that say don't open until New Year's Day. We'll talk about
maybe that a little sooner than that.
Yes. Okay, well, I'm just going with the metaphor. Let's start with a few things that are the same on the first Wednesday of November as they were on the first Monday of the month. Arkansas, deeply red state. All four GOP members of the U.S. House going back to D.C. All seven constitutional officers in the state are Republicans. And for the most part, those races were decided fairly early into the counting.
They were, and I think we still have some supermajorities or close to supermajorities in the Arkansas legislature for the Republicans, too. Yeah, look, we've seen this trend. It's been building and building and building for the last three, four election cycles, and it continues. I wouldn't say that there was a blue wave in Arkansas. I would advocate that the red tide is rising in Arkansas. Those big statewide and congressional races that you talked to, went pretty much according to what we thought they would. We felt like, you know, the Democratic competition that was in some of those races was mostly, they were newcomers and fresh faces and don't have political brands of their own, and they were climbing a pretty big uphill battle. They all performed admirably, and they ran good campaigns, but the Republican brand and the power of incumbency was too much for them. So I don't think we were surprised by the governor's race or any of the down-ballot races, and all the congressional races pretty much held form for what we had seen in some of the public polling we've done and lend themselves to that narrative of this is a Republican state.
Your polling colleague, Jay Barth, professor of political science at Hendricks College, said earlier this week he was going to pay particular attention to Democrat numbers in the 3rd District to see if the party was gaining in this part of the state. What do the numbers tell us this morning?
Well, the numbers this morning tell us that they did not really overperform too far over where they have done traditionally. What we've seen in midterm elections in the past, where there may not have been any Democratic challengers to some of those seats was different this time around because there was competition. But you saw some pretty large majorities in most of the Republican legislative seats in that region of the state, particularly in Benton County. I think we were wondering if those races, those margins might be much, much tighter in many instances. And when I'm looking at the preliminary unofficial results here, I mean, nobody sweated too much on the Republican side up in Northwest Arkansas. Maybe there are a couple of races, but certainly not the majority of them.
The three ballot issues that survived court challenges all passed. Voter ID now part of the state constitution, casinos closer to being part of the landscape here, and minimum wage going up. Any surprises there, either in results or the margins?
Not really to me. I thought that voter ID and minimum wage would pass by some very healthy percentages, and they did. Those are very populist issues, and they're easy to understand concepts for a lot of Arkansas voters. You don't have to explain what voter ID is for somebody to get the idea of it. You don't have to explain minimum wage. And I think on casinos, I think we saw in our polling where the numbers had reversed in the last few weeks, particularly right up before early voting started. You saw some momentum for the casinos. There were a lot of millions of dollars of pro-casino ads ran. There was not really any paid, organized opposition that did anything to counter those messages. And I think casinos are an issue where Arkansans kind of understand them, regardless of what the details of the proposal were. You're either for casinos or you're against casinos. And I think we're all kind of accustomed to casinos now. We've heard the arguments for years. We've seen some proposals before that we haven't got to vote on. This one was a pretty clean one. Surrounding states have them, and we're probably a little more comfortable with casinos because we've seen the lottery and how it's kind of impacted Arkansas. So I think all of that has made for a little bit more of an environment favorable to that. So its margin of victory was comfortable but not a blowout, and I think that's what we were expecting.
And these are not medicinal casinos, so we may see them sooner rather than later.
Yeah, there's still some legwork to be done.
Right.
Oaklawn and Southland will move very quickly, I think, with some of their proposed changes once the state legislature early next year puts whatever enabling legislation has to go into effect. I think it will be a little bit longer road, though, for Jefferson County and Pope County. We have to see what those local communities prefer in that instance, and there'll be some homework to be done on that. And I'll have to admit, I did not see the outcome of the Pope County ordinance in terms of what voters decided down there. There was something to dictate some preference on casinos for a local option, and I'm not familiar with what happened in that election.
You know, in years and decades past, Arkansas representatives to Washington, D.C. have held some pretty important roles. Senator Fulbright, chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, Wilbur Mills, head of the House Ways and Means, Joe T. Robinson, Senate Majority Leader. But lately, Arkansas hasn't had great timing for leadership positions. Senator Blanche Lincoln was defeated just as she was headed toward the chair of the powerful Ag Committee in the Senate. And now 3rd District Congressman Steve Womack, recently selected to head the House Budget Committee, going back to D.C. with a comfortable margin, but now not as a member of the majority party.
Yeah, none of the four congressmen will be members of the majority party, obviously, with them all being Republicans. And that will change, and that'll be a very different circumstance for them and one that they've not been accustomed to because they've been in the majority their entire time in Congress. So, yeah, now the shoe will be on the other foot. Democrats will be the controlling members of those House committees. I do think we'll see a lot more oversight coming of the executive branch of government as a result of this change. I think that'll be the number one thing that Democrats try to put into place. I think it will still be difficult to see any kind of compromise for any type of significant legislation to pass. You've got a divided House and Congress now, and obviously a Republican president. There's not going to be a lot of bipartisanship all of a sudden because of this election cycle. I think, if anything, when we look at national returns, we're as complex and complicated and divided as we were before the election. And but for Steve Womack, yeah, he'll lose that prestigious position there and some of the influence that goes with it. And I think the other thing, too, to keep in mind with Democrats holding control of the House, that's the That's the spending side of Congress there. They will outline some different priorities that may force the president and the Republican Senate to do some things different from, for instance, tax cuts. I doubt we will see anything significant there unless it's a middle-income tax cut. So there'll be some policy changes that will change as a result of spending, but I don't think you'll see any like major pieces of legislation or reform legislation get through. There just won't be enough of a coalition of bipartisan support to do that. One other thing on that, I keep an eye on Senator Bozeman and on Senator Cotton with the gains that the Republicans are going to make in the U.S. Senate. We may see that their influence and their time of being in office now lends them to some prestige. I wouldn't be surprised if we see them get some new assignments in this next Congress that might have a little bit more power than what they've had in the past.
A high-profile mayoral race in northwest Arkansas in Bentonville headed to a runoff, not a surprise, as is the mayoral race in Little Rock. What can you tell us about the results there?
Well, you had some good candidates in both of those races, some organized candidates, some very great campaigners, some people obviously with big coalitions of support. With Stephanie Warman and Jim Webb up in Bentonville, we'll see that runoff come about. That was a pretty close race with Webb having a little bit of a lead. And when you look at the other three candidates in that race, kind of hard to tell where, you know, if any of them's support would gravitate naturally to one of the other two front runners, and would that even change anything? This will be about getting the people that voted for you back to the polls in the runoff election. It will not be about adding very many of those other voters to your support. Same thing in Little Rock. We figured that race might go 1, 2, 3. We didn't know who 1, 2, or 3 would be, and I think Frank Scott really surprised people. He surged early in the evening and late in the evening and has a pretty sizable lead over second-place finisher Baker Kirst in the Little Rock mayor's race. I don't know what Warwick Sabin, the very close third-place finisher, will say to his supporters. I would suspect he will say, vote your heart and do what you think's right. And I do think there will be a group of his supporters that will break to one of those two candidates, and I don't know what it will be, but I doubt it'll be enough to change significantly the outcome of that race. Again, it'll be about turnout and Frank Scott getting his supporters back to the polls and Baker Kirst doing the same thing.
All right, we have a February 29th in 2020, which means we're 731 days away from the 2020 election. What is a way too early forecast, something that we can think about as we move now to the next election cycle?
Well, a race to watch will be what Senator Tom Cotton does. Does he, there's always speculation. He's always going to get mentioned as a potential person to either move to the Trump administration or he stays put and, looks to 2022, I think is the next time. He's up in 2020 for re-election. So does he run for re-election? I think that he will. If he's not been tapped by the Trump administration. And really, I mean, Kyle, right now in national politics, 3 or 4 hours is the equivalent of about a month of politics. So for us to look to 2020, I have no earthly idea. Although I will say there will be a lot of drama in Congress and in Washington, D.C., and we can expect a whole lot of rough sea waters between now and then, and what that will do to the political climate and where things stand by February 2020, I think is a pretty hard crystal ball to read into. But I can promise you there'll be controversy between now and then.
You heard it here. Well, maybe not first, but you heard it here again. Roby Brock is with our partner, Talk Business and Politics. You can follow analysis, results, and runoffs around the clock at talkbusiness.net. Thank you, Roby.
You bet, Kyle.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Earlier this morning, Democrat Denise Garner and a few members of her campaign stood on the corner of Mission and Crossover in East Fayetteville, holding thank you signs and waving at passersby. The first-time politician earned 55% of the vote in House District 84 and ousted Republican incumbent Charlie Collins. After waving at supporters, Garner hopped in her car with me to chat about the election and this morning's event.
So we've been out here honking and waving and thanking everyone for their support during this campaign.
And this is something that you mentioned previously that you wanted to do, win or lose. Why was that important to you?
Absolutely, because we truly had a grassroots effort. We've worked for the last year with volunteers, some as young as 18 months, who were walking around with their parents, and workers that canvas neighborhoods that can't drive yet. So we have 15-year-olds that can't drive, and we've got 90-year-olds who can't walk, but they found something to do in this campaign. And so we wanted to make sure that we thanked them for all that.
So have you had any time to sleep? And either way, have you had time to process the results?
I've not had time to sleep. And I'm in the process of making this a reality in my head. It's exciting. I don't think that my life will change a whole lot, in that I've been down there. I've been paying attention to policy. I've been advocating for the programs that I think are important for our community. The big thing is that I think that we have to have folks that are listening to legislators, that are listening to their constituency, and that are not so extreme that we can't work across the aisle and get some governing done.
This is your first political office. What inspired you to run for the position?
Well, I think, like I said, I've been down there more than 30 years back and forth. But for the first time, I think I've seen such extremism that we're not getting anything done. We're spending time worrying about problems that don't really reflect on everyday Arkansans. So we've got to start thinking about health care and education and infrastructure and the economy and some of those things that Arkansans are really hurting. And so we need to make sure we're working on those things.
You mentioned extremism. There's been some polarization nationally, and I imagine as well we could say in Arkansas in terms of the legislature. You will be going in as a Democrat, so as a minority. What are your plans to try and get things done when you're coming from the minority party?
Yeah. You know, for my entire adult career, I've spent time working in healthcare and in nonprofit work. And, you know, basically we find a goal and look at the gaps, figure out who needs to be at the table, what kind of stakeholders we need that are working on these problems. And then we find a solution together. I don't know whether the folks that I work with are Republicans or Democrats for the most part. We do that every day. You do it. We all do it. So I think that there are ways that we can do that in the legislature as well. I think we have to look at the issues. I think we have to focus on the things that everyone is concerned about and find a way to meet the goals. And I think we can do it. We may not get there in a straight line, but I think we can do it.
Is there any particular issue that you want to address first when you get to the legislature?
Well, I think the first thing, the first issue that I need to tackle is what my constituency, I think, hired me to do, and that is to look at the gun bill. I think that it's a bill that was written hastily and passed hastily, and it's confusing, and it's not something that the college campuses have wanted, and then, you know, it got worse from there. So that's the one issue that every single meet and greet had someone that talked about. So that's something that's very important. So we need to look at that bill. We need to either reverse it so that we're looking at local control over those issues, so that each campus has local control, each community has local control, or we need to make the bill that is there safer and less confusing.
It's still early, but has anybody reached out with any sort of advice on what to expect when you do head to Little Rock?
You know, not really, not yet. I've had lots of folks that I've known throughout the years who have been willing to help and have offered support, but no specifics yet. You know, I was a little surprised last night at the party to realize that we needed to be there Thursday night for opening efforts for some of the new legislatures. But legislators.
So immediately, what's next? A nap, maybe, or?
Well, we have we do have a couple of interviews. We've got to get ready for Thursday. I've got to be down there Thursday, and so looking at places to stay and those kinds of things we'll deal with. I'm assuming on Thursday night and Friday we'll get some orientation, so I'll know a little bit more about what we're doing. But I feel so confident in Greg and David, and am so excited that Nicole and Megan will be down there with me. So I figure we'll figure it out.
Any final thoughts?
You know, I think that one of the things that I'm really excited about is that we are sending first-time women candidates down there. And women tend to be more collaborative, I think, and have been underrepresented and certainly I think that it's something that it's going to make a big difference in the way we legislate. And so I'm hoping that we can reach across the aisle and work with the Women's Caucus and make some things happen.
Denise, thank you for your time and congratulations.
I'm so excited. Thank you. Thank you.
That was Democrat Denise Garner, who has been elected as the District 84 representative in the Arkansas House. I spoke with her this morning. This is Ozarks at Large.
Counties across Arkansas in our region saw a higher voter turnout than the last midterm election 4 years ago. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Jennifer Price, the election coordinator for the Washington County Election Commission, this morning about what she observed during this election cycle.
Elections wrapped up last night, but there was 2 weeks of early voting. So let's start with that. How did that compare to past elections, past midterm elections?
So for past midterm elections, definitely we exceeded what we've ever seen for early vote. We did a little over 33,000 votes during that two-week time period. And in 2014, we did a little over 19,000. So a big jump in the number of people who actually are voting early. But we saw that trend in 2016, where our numbers of early vote went up to 60%. And so I think that is kind of the future of voting, is taking advantage of that 2 weeks and then not as many people are voting on election day.
Is that kind of what you saw yesterday on election day? How did that turnout go?
So that turnout was a little less than we didn't get quite 60% during early vote. So that meant our turnout election day was a little bit more hectic because we had more voters showing up to vote. And so we did almost a close split between 50-50 of early vote versus election day. And so, but certainly that early vote number helps us because we don't have enough equipment to be able to accommodate if everyone came and voted on election day. And so continuing to see that trend of early voters just helps us facilitate what we need to do on election day. Certainly we had long lines at some of our locations, but this was a high voter turnout. You know, even though the number shows that it was only a 49% of the total registered voters actually voted, it's still, in terms of actual numbers of votes cast, higher than what we've ever seen because we have a higher amount of registered voters in Washington County. And so compared to 2014, when we had 47%, this 49% feels like a lot more because it was a lot more people voting since we have the higher number of registered voters.
You guys can actually break down the numbers by age groups that voted. Can you tell us a little bit more about kind of what you guys saw in your figures?
Yeah, so we see, so the breakdown kind of goes between ages of 18 and 24. There was a far fewer number that voted early, so the total number was 2,128. And then when you get into 25 to 34 and 35 to 44, that number is very similar, you know, quite, you know, close to 4,500 a piece or so. And then when you get into 45 to 54, 55 to 64, and 65 to 74, you get the same type of similar numbers, right over 5,000 and 6,500 there. And then 75 plus, 3,500 voted. So there's, you know, the 18 to 24 is the smallest number of registered, or of not necessarily registered voters, but of voters who showed up to vote. And so that's kind of, I think, a trend that we do see, that the voters who do show up tend to be voters that are above the age of 45 and older.
As far as these last few weeks of elections, any kind of problems that you guys had to deal with? Anything unusual from the years past, or was it sort of the same stuff you guys are kind of used to?
One thing we did encounter this election more than I've seen in other elections, and I think it has to do with people are so used to doing things online. We had a lot of voters who came in and who said they were registered to vote, and we couldn't find them in our system. And so we would ask, well, how did you register to vote? Or, you know, what was the process that you went through? And they said that they registered to vote online, and then they printed a card and they were registered to vote. Well, Arkansas doesn't have an online voter registration system, but there are a lot of sites out there that offer to help you get registered to vote. You fill out some basic information and then they email you a form, but you have to complete the form by sending it in. So I think that a lot of voters got the emailed form and then assumed that they were registered to vote. You know, we had over 304 provisional ballots cast, and a high percentage of those were from people who were not registered to vote. And we heard over and over again, well, where did you register to vote? Well, I registered online. So Arkansas currently doesn't have that system. And so we actually noticed that as a trend during this voting cycle. And of course, that causes, you know, disconcern for the voter because they think that they are registered to vote. And then our poll workers are trying to, you know, solve the problem for the voter. And ultimately, they either, you know, are not eligible to vote, actually, or they'll vote a provisional ballot, but it won't count since they are not registered to vote.
It's Wednesday after elections. What does this day look like for you guys here in the here in this office?
So this day is almost as hectic as the day before. We have a runoff election, so obviously we are doing all the prep work we need for the runoff election. We also have to deal with the over 300 provisional ballots that were cast and see which ones are countable, which ones we can't count, and then we want to look at any races that were close, and so determine if any of those provisional ballots would impact the outcome of that race. And so we have a very busy day ahead of us today, and in fact, a busy couple of days just going through the amount of paperwork that comes in after an election.
Thanks for filling us in on kind of what's happened over the last few weeks. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much.
That was Jennifer Price, the election coordinator for the Washington County Election Commission.
Mount Sequoia Center hosts Smartathon Tuesday, November 13th from 5:30 until 8:30 p.m. This fundraiser is a team trivia competition complete with food, drink, a silent auction, and prizes to trivia winners. Team registration, individual tickets, and more information available at mountsequoia.org/events. 91.3 is supported by the Scott Family Amazium, inviting families across the Ozarks to make every day amazing. Open Wednesday through Monday, the Amazium ignites curiosity in children of all ages through interactive experiences in science, technology, engineering, art, and math. Located at 1009 Museum Way in Bentonville. Information at amazium.org. Additional support for KUAF and Arkansas Public Media comes from Simmons Bank, with more than 90 community-based locations in Arkansas, providing banking and lending services. Dreams realized. SimmonsBank.com for more.
More Democrats ran in Benton County this election than ever before. Of the 8 state House districts in the county, Democrats contested 7 races. Of those 7, 6 challenged incumbent Republicans. But there weren't any victories for the Democratic Party. In fact, many candidates lost by wide margins. There were a couple slightly closer races. One of them was the House race in District 93, which encompasses Bentonville. Democrat Gayatri Agnew ran against incumbent Republican Jim Dodson. Agnew spoke with us earlier this morning after she was defeated, 42% to Dodson's 58%. Good morning.
Good morning.
We last spoke
back in June, as all the campaigns were just kind of starting to organize and then ramp up. How are you feeling this morning?
To be really honest, I'm feeling energized, hopeful, grateful, and really tired. you know, I love our political process, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity to have run this race here in Northwest Arkansas. I have only ever been involved in politics in much larger communities, and it was a really exciting thing to run a race where you really were able to get to know your neighbors, and your neighbors became your friends, and your neighbors became your volunteers and supporters. And so, yeah, we canvassed over 5,000 houses across the district, which means myself or a supporter of my campaign, a volunteer, was able to have conversations with thousands of voters in Bentonville. And that was a really motivating and exciting thing, but it's also a really exhausting thing. I definitely walked more in the last couple of months than maybe I ever have, and saw more of the communities and neighborhoods of Bentonville. But it's exhausting. It's hard work. Running a strong and aggressive campaign where you make an effort to actually talk directly to voters is an exhausting process. It's a really meaningful and rewarding process, but it takes a lot of time because they're one-on-one conversations, and you can't do that quickly. So yes, I'm very tired, but I'm also feeling very hopeful and energized by what I heard through a lot of those conversations.
So as the outcomes came in last night, what do you think this says about where Democrats stand in Benton County at this point?
I think it says things are changing, and I think it reminds us that change comes slowly, and perhaps sometimes comes more slowly than those of us that work really hard on something like this would want to have come. But, you know, I had to remind myself last night a couple of times when we saw returns come in and saw our numbers above 40, that the last time a Democrat ran, she got 29% of the vote. And so you have to put it in context. It's one of those things where we weren't able to get the result last night to where we wanted to get a win for my campaign, but I think we absolutely got a win for voters in Bentonville because their voice was heard and they engaged in a way that so many voters in Bentonville, many of whom have lived here for years, have never engaged in our political process. And I think that's a bigger win than the outcome of a single campaign.
So what happens next? I mean, for you personally, but also for Benton County Democrats, you know, the party in general, especially, you know, over the next 2 years, the next election is 2020. So
the next partisan election is 2020. I'm actually a lot more excited about the election in 2019. Because for me, politics is local, whether you're running on a partisan ticket or you're running for school board or city council. And we've actually got quite a few exciting local elections coming in 2019, nonpartisan, but still elections. And for me, you know, I've said through this entire campaign that this is less about the Democrat and Republican Party and more about this community. And I still very much believe that this morning. So I think it's about encouraging and supporting new voices and new leaders to find ways to lead and contribute in meaningful ways across this community. And that very much includes leadership at a school board level, at a city council level, mayoral leadership. And certainly, I have already started thinking about 2020 and in what ways I can contribute to continuing to build a progressive community in Northwest Arkansas. But I definitely don't want to skip the 2019 election in that process because I think it's important.
What are you taking away from this experience?
Well, so it's funny. It's a 9-month-long thing. I didn't really realize that until I sort of went, oh, when we launched the campaign and then now the election came. And, you know, I've talked a lot on the campaign about being a mom. So not to make this sound odd, but like running a campaign like this is an insane level of commitment. And so I joke that, you know, the campaign was my third baby. And it's an incredible thing. And I think if you look at it through that lens, you look at it through a labor of love that occurred over the course of 9 months, it has an outcome that isn't good or bad. It just has an outcome that allows you to learn, right? So I did lose in the sense that I will not serve Bentonville down in Little Rock, but I won in the sense that I am and will continue to be more engaged in my local community than I was before I decided to run. And that outcome is really gratifying to me and really meaningful to me. So I think the number one thing that I take away from this campaign is that everybody's voice in this community matters and will continue to matter. And I was able to meet and connect with individuals across the community who will remain lifelong friends. And I'm really optimistic and hopeful about what we can all build together. And when I say me, I don't mean Democrats. I mean Jim Dodson and me. I mean people who care about this community, how we can work together to make sure that the people here in Bentonville get the roads, jobs, and schools that they deserve, but also that people's voices continue to be heard in our legislative process at both the local level and in Little Rock.
Well, thanks for speaking with us this morning, and I hope you get some sleep now.
I hope so, too. I could use a long nap.
That was Gayatri Agnew, one of the 7 State House Democrats who ran in Benton County this election. She lost to incumbent Republican Jim Dodson. I'm Zuzanna Sitek, and you're listening to Ozarks at Large.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda with a quick survey of some other races of note in the Arkansas 2018 midterms. Many legislators seeking another term in Little Rock won, though not all. Republican incumbent Jeff Williams from Springdale was defeated by Democrat Megan Godfrey in the race to represent District 89. Other GOP incumbents in Northwest Arkansas earned additional terms, including Robin Lundstrom in District 87, Jana De La Rosa in District 90, Jim Dodson in District 93, Rebecca Petty in District 94, and Grant Hodges in District 96. In all, a dozen women, Democrats and Republicans combined, were sent to Little Rock in legislative races last night. 2 former state representatives are now heading to the state Senate. Democrat Greg Lenning of Fayetteville and Republican Bob Ballinger from Berryville won their races for the state Senate last night. Bentonville voters have not yet selected a new mayor. Stephanie Orman and Jim Webb will face off in a runoff December 4th. In final but unofficial results, Webb had about 43% of the vote and Orman about 40% in the 5-person race. Runoffs will take place in Fayetteville as well for a pair of city council races. The Ward 1 Position 1 race will be determined between candidates Sonia Gutierrez and Olivia Trimble, and the Ward 4 Position 1 race will be a runoff between incumbent John Latour and Teresa Turk. Both of those races had 3 candidates. 2 other city council spots in Fayetteville were determined last night. Incumbent Mark Kenyon was reelected in Ward 2, and Sloan Scroggins, a newcomer to the board, was elected with 51% of the vote in Ward 3. A newcomer will join Springdale's city council. Amelia Taldo Williams won her race for the Ward 3 Position 1 seat in Springdale with about 56% of the vote. Mike Overton and Mike Lawson were also elected to the Springdale City Council. Republican Joseph Wood earned about 53% of the vote to earn another term as Washington County Judge. Judge David Hudson, another Republican incumbent, will serve another term as county judge in Sebastian County, and Van Buren voters elected Joe Hurst as mayor there. Arkansas Supreme Court Justice Courtney Goodson will remain on the state's high court. She was reelected over challenger David Sterling with just over 55% of the vote.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Timothy Dennis. Some Arkansans will get a raise following the results of yesterday's election. There were 3 issues up for consideration yesterday, and the last item on the ballot, Issue 5, was a proposal to raise the state's minimum wage. As of this morning, about 68% of voters were in favor of raising the minimum wage. This morning, I talked with David Couch, the chair of Arkansans for a Fair Wage, which was the committee in support of Issue 5 on the ballot. Couch says the support for increasing the minimum wage wasn't surprising.
We did a similar issue in 2014, and it passed with, I think, approximately 65% of the vote, then carried every county in the state. And before we decided to try to get the measure on the ballot, we conducted a poll, and we found that people in Arkansas would support it similarly. Our initial polls were about 65% as well. And, you know, we did a little education during the campaign, and we got really close to 70% of the people to vote.
That is a pretty good margin. I mean, it was close to 70%. Is that high of a return, that surprising?
It is and it isn't. Anytime you get 70% of the people of the state of Arkansas to agree with anything, I think it's surprising. given the supposed conservative nature of our state and the supposed progressive nature of this initiative. But if you know Arkansas, like I know Arkansas and Arkansans, you know, we're kind and caring individuals. And, you know, we know that there are a substantial portion of the people of our state that live in poverty, and giving them a little bit of a raise in order to help them, you know, make ends meet to feed their families is important to everybody in the state.
So how and when will this be set into motion?
Well, after the first of the year, the wage will go up 75 cents an hour from 8.50 to 9.25. And then in 2020, it'll go up to $10. And then in 2021, it'll go up to $11. We phased in over time so it wouldn't have an adverse effect on businesses.
Why settle on that $11 number for 2021?
Well, it came about originally because, as you recall, Walmart this last summer announced that they were starting their employees out at $11 an hour. And since Walmart's based in Arkansas, we thought that was a good point. You know, we submitted the proposal to the Attorney General, and she denied it the first time we submitted it, even though it was identical to the one in 2014. When I resubmitted it the second time, I took it up to $12 an hour in 2022, and she didn't approve that ballot title as well. And so I had to file suit in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court gave her the option of which of those two measures to approve or write a ballot title for it. She chose the 11 and not the 12.
So, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, 4 years ago, there was another minimum wage increase on the ballot that passed. With it now going up to $11 in 2021, is there a chance that another minimum wage issue could make the ballot in 2022?
Well, you never say never. I guess we'll have to see how this one really affects the people in the state of Arkansas and where we are in the end of 2021. In 2014, we knew it wasn't enough. If you look at, you know, what constitutes a living wage, you know, $11 an hour really doesn't get it. But if you look at Arkansas compared to other states, you know, $11 in Arkansas gets you what $15 gets you in California. So, you know, it's nice for Arkansas to be at the top of an issue at some point in time instead of dragging up the bottom.
That was David Couch, a Little Rock attorney and chair of Arkansans for a Fair Wage, which supported the ballot issue for increasing the minimum wage in Arkansas. Other issues on yesterday's ballot passed muster with voters. Issue 1, which codified voter ID rules into the state constitution, passed with almost 80% of the vote. And voters also approved Issue 2, which allows for casinos to open in Pope and Jefferson counties, at Oaklawn Racetrack in Garland County, and at Southland Racetrack in Crittenden County. Issue 2 passed with about 54% of the vote. This is Ozarks at Large.
91.3 is supported by Malco Theaters, featuring the Metropolitan Opera's live HD production of Marnie, Saturday, November 10th at 11:55 a.m. at the Razorback Cinema in Fayetteville. Malco.com for tickets and information. Walton Arts Center welcomes Paul Thorne, the Blind Boys of Alabama, and the McCrary Sisters in their Mission Temple Fireworks Revival, November 17th at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Tickets now available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600. Ozark Beer Company presents Face of Winter, Warren Miller's 69th ski film, Friday, November 16th at the Victory Theater in downtown Rogers. Ozark Beer Company and other vendors will be on hand with refreshments, raffle items, and more. Seating is limited. Doors open at 6, with the film at 7. ArkansasPublicTheater.org for tickets.
Time for a survey of live music that will be available in the area. To do that, Timothy Dennis in the Harold and Blanchcock studio. Howdy, Timothy.
Howdy, Kyle. How are you?
I'm all right. It's been a long week.
Yeah, it has, but you know the best way to wind down from a long week that I've found?
Live music?
Absolutely.
All right.
Starting with Thursday, the next On the Map show is going to take place at Smoke and Barrel Tavern. It's going to feature Molly Birch.
I'm not a quiet singer, but I'm a quiet talker. They tell me to be louder. No, I won't even bother. No, I won't even bother. That's not my style. I don't need a scream to get my point across. I don't need a yell to know that I'm the boss.
Tickets for that are $10 in advance, $12 at the door, and that show will get underway at about 9 p.m. Moving on to Friday, Sad Daddy's back in Fayetteville.
That's good.
It's fantastic. Old-time kind of folk band.
Mm-hmm. Perfect for autumn.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm going back to Arkansas while I still have some time. I feel my spirits lift soon as I cross that borderline. This Texas town's so dusty, I can barely breathe at all, and I hear the sound of the rushing waters call. On a mountainside where the river faces a big old sky, wide open spaces.
That show will take place at Stage 18 in Fayetteville, has a $10 cover, and it will get underway at about 8 o'clock. Also Friday night, still in Fayetteville, someone I think you're fairly familiar with, James McMurtry,
yeah,
is going to be at George's Majestic Lounge.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you describe him as roots rock?
Or? Oh, I think so. I think that's a fair assessment, yes.
And it won't be long. Soon as I get my license, color me gone. Knock it off, Johnny. Man, you're living in your head. You ain't even got a car, and those chicks don't believe a word you said.
Tickets are $20 in advance, $22 day of, and that show will get underway at about 9:30 Friday night. Also Friday night, but up in Springdale, Black Apple Crossing, Townhouse Fire will have a show.
Help me now. Strike down a common foe that we share. Trust in me. Place this on your right ear. Swallow your pride. Trust in me. Petrified.
It's apparently their last show for Arkansas in 2018. That show at Black Apple Crossing is set to get underway at about 8 p.m. Over in Eureka Springs Friday night, The Lark and the Loon will be at Brews.
Oh, you know that I like The Lark and the Loon
very much. I know your fondness for them.
Yes.
Golden sunrise over the hill. The days are getting long. Flash of crimson in that red bud tree. And the grass is turning green. On a hill. Place to call our own, a little Ozark mountain home.
Nocturnal orchestra in starlight, in a cage made of fireflies. Luna moth lands on a window pane, and in the dawn light it flies away.
That show gets underway at about 7 o'clock Friday night at Brews in Eureka Springs. Then on the other end of the KUAF listening area, down in Fort Smith, Harry's Downtown will have the Drunken Hearts.
The Drunken Hearts?
Yes.
Okay.
They're an Americana rock band from Colorado.
I know, sweetheart, don't go. Don't go. I know, sweetheart. This circle never ends. My drunken heart won't mend. Stuck in the mud again. Spinning my wheels and then I still can't find your door.
Cover for that show is about $5. It'll get underway at around 9 o'clock. Moving on to Saturday, there's going to be a show at Stage 18 featuring several local legends, including Drawing Blanks, Sarah Lathan, Samantha Hunt, and Ashton Barbary. That show gets underway at about 8 o'clock, and it has a $5 cover. That's Saturday night at Stage 18 in Fayetteville. Still Saturday night, but over in Eureka Springs, a couple of folk-ish bands are going to be at Chelsea's, Chucky Wags and the Creek Rocks.
Yeah.
That show is set to get underway at about 9 o'clock, again at Chelsea's in Eureka Springs. Then, moving on to Sunday, there are going to be a couple shows at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville.
Ooh, an afternoon and an evening?
Uh-huh.
All right.
Starting with a celebration of Ralph Odom, the giant mountain troll. Earl and them and the Nace Brothers will play.
Perfect.
That show is from noon to about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Shoes then, optional.
I would say that's
shoes
fair.
Shoes optional for that's dancing, fair. Yes.
And then Sunday night, a guy by the name of Hayes Carl is going to be at George's.
Arkansas. I don't know if he's an Arkansas native, but he went to school at Hendrix.
Also on that show, Bill, is going to be Jack Ingram, who is a country music writer, singer from the Austin area.
Yeah.
She's in a trail to get her. There she is. She's got her shades on. Loaded down, we're headed out of town, jumping off the deep end, going barefoot and crazy.
That show has a $25 cover in advance, $30 day of, and it's set to get underway at about 8:30.
Not bad for a Sunday night.
Not bad at all. And then moving on to Tuesday, another On the Map show, this time at George's. It's going to feature Regret Pop, as Sun June calls themselves.
Okay.
And Bummercore, as Magnolia dubs their music.
So if you're interested in finding out what Regret Pop or Bummercore is, neither of them sound like you're going to walk out of there thinking things are great.
I mean, it's music to listen to if you're licking your wounds, I would say.
Regret Pop, I like that.
I love it. That show has a $8 cover in advance, $10 the day of, and it's set to get underway at about 8:30.
And when is that?
Tuesday night.
Very good. Thank you, Timothy.
Thank you.
A listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and OARC. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. Contributors today included Antoinette Grajeda, Susanna Sitek, Timothy Dennis, and Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics. Timothy mastered our show as well. Antoinette Grajeda curates the songs that we have at the end of many of our programs, including today's from Ashton Barbary. She will be part of the Bike Rack Records album release Friday night in Bentonville. You can learn more about her at her Facebook page. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Remember, dear, nothing lasts forever. I don't regret it since it's over.
story, but I fell in love with a stranger who put some man in my coffee.